This is Wells Tech, a show that explores the intersection of technology and ministry. Wells Tech is a part of the Streams Media Network sponsored by Wells, the Wisconsin Evangelical Lutheran Synod. Your show hosts are Martin Spriggs and Sally Draper. Join the conversation at wellstech.wells.net. Welcome back, everybody, to Wells Tech. This is episode 440, recorded on Wednesday, April 13th, 2016. My name is Martin Spriggs, and this is a show, as you probably already know, about ministry and technology. And you probably already know my co-host, because she's joined me for almost every one of these 440s, Sally Draper. Hey, Sally, how are you?
I am awesome today, Martin. I'd say Wednesday, April 13th is a pretty memorable day, one you might want to write on your calendar. What do you think?
I think so, too. I have a new grandson. Grandson number two, Arlo is his name, A-R-L-O.
So congratulations.
Murray is a little brother.
That's wonderful news.
Yeah, it is. I can't wait to see him. We'll probably go down this weekend if my daughter Alicia is able and out of the hospital. I'm sure Debbie is chomping at the bit to get down there as soon as possible. So, yeah, awesome news. And it is pretty easy to remember because my first grandson's birthday was a week ago. So they're exactly 7 days apart. April's a good month. That's my birthday month as well. So all is well in the Spriggs household and now the Cameron household. Mother and son are doing great. Have pictures already. 6 pounds, 12, 18 ounces, something like that. 20 inches long, healthy, and as far as we know, and everything's good. So,
well, we join you in rejoicing over that wonderful news. That's a huge blessing, and
yes.
we welcome him into God's family. I'm sure he'll grow in faith. That's wonderful. Yep.
So we still have a show to do regardless of all the festivities in my life. And I'm kind of excited about our show topic because it's somewhat near and dear to our hearts these days as we have decided to do some migrating and upgrading and maintaining our online learning platform. We've called it Wells.net University. So since that was top of mind, we decided, well, maybe we should have a discussion about just online learning in general on the show, and then specifically about the platform we use, which is Moodle.
Yep. Great topic to discuss. Like you said, a lot of times, Martin, we draw ideas from what's in front of us, and that's certainly a topic that we've been working with most recently. But I think it's a topic that more and more touches many people in our audience because online learning is growing in popularity, and it's a tool that we can make use of in our churches and schools for a lot of different purposes. I can think of many different ways online learning could be used. In outreach efforts, you know, in school, many people are doing blended classrooms or flipped classrooms, so having an online learning platform would be very popular there. In the church setting, obviously, there's catechism classes and things like that. I think it was one of our presenters at Wells Tech Conference last summer who introduced us to the idea of a blended kind of catechism approach where he's actually having his students with their parents do the study from home and then come together just to discuss it as a group kind of after the fact and involving the parents in that process. So lots of different possibilities for the use of online learning in the church. And it seems like in our digital age, we ought to be able to pull these things together pretty well. You know, there's all kinds of a myriad of platforms for communication. You could do things like private Facebook groups or whatever. You can post videos on YouTube. But what's magical or special about the online learning environment is that it kind of pulls all that together with learning in mind. And as you mentioned,
framework, a platform. And I think you don't have to look very far or look too deep in the society in which we live to see this distributed this distributed networks we have in our that are our churches. Just if you're looking at internal communications and trying to provide resources where distance can become an issue. We don't have neighborhood churches really anymore, so we have distance separating our confirmands from their teachers. We have distance separating our membership from our churches where people are driving a half hour, an hour, hour and a half to get to church. Are there ways to share knowledge, to learn, to continue to study God's word that don't require a face-to-face experience? And I think these online learning tools certainly do that. And even when there is a blended situation, like you were talking about, it certainly helps the course or helps the learning experience to have a course type platform that can host material so that somebody can get at it kind of see the progression of content through it. I can't think of too many scenarios where it's not a good idea to post your content online.
Yeah, I'm actually working with our congregation here at St. Paul's New Ulm, and you might remember back a few months ago, we talked with our member ministry team, and they talked about discovery workshops where they put together some really great materials about learning about your spiritual gifts and things. Excellent, excellent resources they've developed, and they'd like to put those online so they can reach more people than they've been able to reach in the face-to-face meeting. Because of time differences or distance or whatever it may be, being able to offer those online seems like a really logical progression for them. So I just see lots and lots of application for it, for sure. Maybe we should talk about some of those components that would make up an online learning class. And I mentioned already video is one of them, being able to share basically any types of resources. So perhaps it's text resources as web pages or PDF documents or whatever. Maybe it's presentations and you'd want to share them in a way that someone could watch them like a movie or scroll through them or whatever. So, you know, just kind of pushing out information is one objective. But I think the sweet spot is more of the two-way communication where people can talk about things or react to things they've read or watched or whatever it may be. So online discussion forums or maybe even quizzes where there's some capabilities for all different types of quiz questions so they could write, you know, paragraph responses or multiple choice responses or whatever it may be.
Yep. The thing about it is all these things that we're talking about, you can probably find one-offs online someplace and, you know, use a tool here, use a tool there, use a tool here. The beauty in some of these platforms like Moodle or others that are available like Schoology, et cetera, you kind of bring it all together so that it's very easy for the student and the educator to go to one place and manage it. On the administration side, there's also some benefits to having it all in one place. You know, if there's any grading that needs to go on, rubrics that are put together, the ability to copy a course so that you can use it year over year. You get fun things like badges, important things like analytics and tracking, so you understand how the course was used, how much time was spent in it. So it's kind of a stewardship approach. Lots of things that come into play when you use some of these platforms, even though it makes it a little bit more complicated to set up and manage. There's value on the back end if you kind of bring it all together, and it's helpful. I think it makes it a lot easier for the student to kind of work their way through content or course material.
And there's continuity course to course potentially as well. So if they understand the environment, then they can make use of it somewhere else. And this day and age, you'd want it to be mobile friendly. I would guess, you know, people would sit down at a minimum with an iPad, but even with a mobile phone these days to explore course resources, watch a video, whatever it may be. So those kind of considerations certainly should come into play. And going with a dedicated platform, you know, adopting a Moodle or whatever it might be, is going to kind of take some of that off of your back where they're going to handle the mobile version of it or whatever for you, as long as you adopt the right solution.
So. Right. There are concerns, of course, when you kind of pick your solution. Some are going to be better fits than others. The one we've been talking about or using for a long time is an open source tool called Moodle. Many people are maybe familiar with that if they've ever taken an MLC course, they went through the seminary. I mean, it is kind of the platform of choice among our circles. One, because maybe mainly because it's free, but I think also because it's very flexible and full-featured. But with that comes the need to host it. So you need to find a hosting platform. And if you're hosting it, you have to maintain it. And security is always a concern. And I know we were, you know, back in the day when we first set up Wells.net University, it seemed like every other week we had some kind of security patch or security hole, which is not unusual with software in general, especially open source software, where popular packages especially are targets, and they have security holes, and you need to be vigilant in trying to make sure that that platform is safe, especially if you have kids' information in it and you're maintaining information about your users.
Definitely. You know, I threw a question out to our Wells Tech listserv, Martin, about Moodle and who might be using it. And we heard from Jason Schmidt. Jason wrote to us. I just want to read a little bit about a little bit of his response, because it kind of speaks to some of those things you were just talking about. He says, I love Moodle. It has the right software philosophy, pedagogical philosophy, and business model. So, you know, open source, emphasis on collaborative learning, all those things. While all these things are great and good, there's a few challenges that are presented with the platform. Support. Unless you're a PHP programmer and very comfortable with web servers, Moodles can be difficult to support yourselves. Chances are you'll have to pay for some support or use a subscription service. Interface. The default interface for Moodle is pretty clunky. You can install a theme, which makes Moodle more friendly on mobile devices, and tweaks the UI to make it a little more elegant. And then training. MLC offers online teaching courses, but you need to be very comfortable with Moodle docs and looking there for help and things like that as well. So we have some training resources we'll share a little bit later in the show as well, but I think he hits the nail on the head that it's probably not for the faint of heart. There's a learning curve to being comfortable with Moodle. The good news is, like you said, MLC uses it, WLC uses it, WLS uses it. So it's very adopted among our Wells education entities. So if you've taken classes anywhere, you're going to have become familiar with the environment. And if you've taught classes, then Moodle is going to be the same environment for you to use on your own as it was on any of those sites. So, So that's the positive side of it. One other really exciting positive side to Moodle that we just weren't aware of when we began doing research for this show. Let's see if I can find the right link to show. Probably not, because I have a lot of windows open here. But what I want to tell you about is the Moodle Cloud. So you can actually get cloud-based hosting. And I will share a link real quick, and we'll have a link in the show notes to this site as well. We went out to Moodle Cloud and set up wellstech.moodlecloud.com, and it is a completely free site. It is ad-supported, so you'll see some advertisements in the footer area and then in the sidebar of the courses. They do have a monthly fee that you can pay to get rid of the ads for students. So if it's really bothering you that the ads are there and you don't want your students to see them, you can, you know, pay a little bit to get rid of those. And I didn't look up that pricing yet, but
it looks like most of the ads are from Moodle or Moodle partners themselves. Yeah. So it's not like, you know, the potluck you get on YouTube or something like that. So it's kind of a known entity maybe.
Exactly. So maybe not that bad to deal with. The limitations of the free Moodle software cloud site is that you can only have 50 users accounts on the site. So you could kind of keep that in check if you're a teacher, maybe, or even a smaller elementary school or whatever it may be that wants to use it just for your upper graders or whatever. 50 may not be any problem for you. You may be well under that threshold, but you can also, you know, turn off accounts or get rid of accounts for people that have, you know, transitioned away from your site to keep your threshold, you know, keep yourself under that threshold. So 50 user limit, and then a 200 megabyte amount of storage space, and that's really low. Yeah, but you know, you can store your files on Google Drive or Dropbox or wherever and link to them on your Moodle site. So they're basically just enforcing or encouraging you to host your files elsewhere, so they don't have to do that. They're doing plenty for you to give you the Moodle site because it has all those capabilities we were talking about, Martin. It has you know, quizzing built in, very robust quizzing. It has gradebooks and rubrics and badges and online chat, discussion forums.
I'm assuming that they're maintaining the software then too, so they're applying the patches and upgrades, which is really kind of the most stressful part of a Moodle installation.
Absolutely. So yeah, definitely excited to find the Moodle Cloud option, and I think it could be a very viable alternative to something like Schoology, Edmodo, Google Classroom, and give you perhaps a more robust or at least a different experience than what you get on those other online classroom type options. Yeah. And some of those, Schoology, Edmodo, Google Classroom, you have to qualify for. So you maybe have to have a .edu domain name or, you know, verify that you're a K through 12 teacher, not just someone wanting to put their catechism class online for church or to have an outreach-based course or whatever it may be. Right. So
now we should probably disclaimer this conversation a little bit where I don't say that we would dismiss or discourage you from looking at a Schoology or Edmodo or Google Classroom because those are a lot easier to set up. I think they are easier to maintain. Sometimes they're more visually appealing. Jason, I think, alluded to that in his little email. So if your needs are modest, you may want to definitely look at those because Moodle's going to be an investment. There's going to be a learning curve. And I would think before you jump into something like Moodle, you want to have a strategy. You want to have kind of thought through what it is you're trying to do. And you should kind of go in with eyes wide open. And I think that's the reason that I think some of our institutions have picked it because it's very full-featured, but you have to spend some time with it. You
know, right. And maybe this Moodle Cloud is a great way to do that. Go create a free site and see what it's capable of and see if you need all of that.
Exactly. So, and the others have other advantages too. But I would say that you've got to kind of examine your needs. Like any other software selection process, examine your needs and have a plan going in. So.
Yep. So just to kind of circle back, Martin, we talked at the beginning, you said that we were looking at our Moodle site, Wells.net University. Just wanted to bring that up on the screen. We are in the process of moving to an updated installation of Moodle. So very soon you're going to be able to get access to the brand new Wells.net University. And we're excited in talks with different areas of ministry and things. There are groups that are looking to do more online learning within Wells. So just to pull together a few of the resources that we have in Wells, we have a great Q&A tool out there that certainly could be used for research or learning about different questions related to our doctrine, theology, that kind of thing. We also have something we call Defining Religion or a Glossary of Religious Terms, and it's big and robust, and I learn something new every time I look at a new word in the defining religion. We actually have it coming up on the homepage of our Wells.net University site, so lots of great stuff there. I had a couple of video series I wanted to make sure and note for online learning in general. Our interactive faith series, those are all archived out on Vimeo, so you can watch past Bible studies that have been done in the interactive faith series. Most recently, the ministry of Elisha was completed. So interesting Bible studies there. And then Communicating Christ, which is based off of a Bible class done, I want to say, by Bivens and Valesky, and that Kingdom Workers actually went through the process of recording 34 videos around the Communicating Christ series. So if you're looking for a resource like that, we'll definitely include that link in today's show notes.
Very good. So lots of examples out there. So if you're curious about how Moodle works, you can certainly visit those sites, and we'd be happy to chat with you too. But and if you've got experiences as well, I don't know if a lot of congregations or schools that use it, but there are certainly some, and probably be good for us to maybe create a list of those who could maybe act as resources. So anything else to say about online learning, Sally?
Well, I just will make mention one more thing, that we'll have links in the show notes to some learning resources from Moodle. So if you do want to dip your toe in the water a little bit or read up on some of it, I found a great administrative quick reference guide. And I also found that there's a site called learn.moodle.net. And twice a year, they run a 4-week MOOC, which is, I know what that stands for.
Yeah.
Online learning with a large group of people. And the next one actually isn't until August 7th. So I think typically in January and August each year, they run these Moodle MOOCs where you can earn badges and learn a whole lot about Moodle for free. That's at learn.moodle.net. So resources are definitely out there, and it can be done, and it can be done really well with Moodle, but it does take a good bit of an investment.
Very good. Let's move along from our main topic to our staples. One of them is our news in tech section.
And yeah, I actually came across this article thanks to an article, and I can't even remember what the source is. I have it here. It was an article from Make Use Of. Wow, I totally drew a blank. And Pastor Rob Gunther, if you're watching, I have you to thank for Make Use Of, because it's a great tech news feed that you can subscribe to, get daily emails, and find out things that are very popular and stuff in technology. And the headline recently was Facebook Live for Everyone. So several articles in here, but the one that they featured was about something called Facebook Live. And it's basically the ability via your Facebook account to use your mobile phone or whatever it is to do live video, your web camera on your computer, whatever it is, and to stream live video via your Facebook account. We've talked about this not that long ago, Martin, about services like Periscope and others. Yep. Snapchat is really popular, and this is kind of combining features from all of those. So people can like your video in the process. You'll see little hearts float across your video as they're watching and liking what you're streaming or whatever. It's, like I said, integrated with Facebook, and it's going to be rolling out to all Facebook users. Apparently, they had it on celebrities' accounts up until this point, but last week they announced that they're going to be rolling it out. You can even do live in your Facebook groups or on your event pages, so that would be a way to live stream from a particular event or to a particular segment and group of people. So,
It has, I think it's rolled out now. I tested it out last night. I believe it's only available on mobile devices right now, at least. So okay. It's on my iPhone. It's supposed to be available on Android. It's very easy. You don't have to sign up or anything. You just go to your Facebook app, click on update status, and there's a button down there, a little icon that's kind of an image or profile icon with little circles around it, kind of radio waves that you click on. Just ask permission to use your camera and your microphone, and you can give it the privacy like you can any other status update, all the way from just yourself to public, and tell the update a little bit about it and the way it goes. I don't know if there's any limit on it. I just tried it real briefly to see, just to make sure it was operational, but free to share. I did tag something in Twitter using our hashtag WellsTech designation, so that we will in a couple weeks in our community feedback section review a couple articles, one of them specifically about how churches might be able to use this new feature within Facebook on their Facebook pages.
Cool. I'm wondering if WellsTech needs to use this new feature. And
I'm wondering, too.
Yeah. Be on the cutting edge. Anyway.
Yep. Yeah. And it certainly is could be a very useful feature if you have a good solid nucleus of Facebook followers, where it's a real easy way to get stuff out, introduce things. It could be more promotional rather than just streaming a live event. Lots of different uses for it. So I think it'll be interesting to see how churches use this or schools use this as we move forward.
Definitely. And, you know, we've talked about many times before about how the old modes of communication where maybe publishing companies or news media or whatever it is controlled the message that was getting out. And this is just breaking down even further in big ways, you know, the big ways, the ways that people can communicate and how far their reach can go, not just with written word now, but with video as well.
Yep. We didn't have it in our pre-show stuff because Facebook's developer conference just happened. But one thing I noticed coming out of that was also they have created a way for businesses or companies or whoever to create bots within Facebook Messenger. So, for example, you could connect with a CNN bot or a weather bot or another company bot and order stuff. So the bot is really just kind of artificial intelligence responding to your queries. And if they've done it well, you could have a quote-unquote real conversation with the computer and get information out of it. That's very interesting to me as well. Where there could be a lot of uses for something like that, with if it's programmed correctly, get answers to the questions that you have, maybe even on a cinema level.
That's pretty cool. So, lots to learn.
All right, let's move on to our next segment. That is Wells Now.
And yes, in keeping with online learning and just learning in general, we wanted to make mention that Martin Luther College has recently made their summer 2016 course listings available, and you can register now. So they have courses in associated with obtaining graduate study credits, but they also have lots of continuing education courses. Martin, you and I are both teaching courses in the educational technology section of their curriculum, but they have things in history, satellite courses happening around the country. Actually, I talked with one of the professors the other day, and he's heading to Florida this summer for a class down at Doral Lutheran Academy. Right. They have special education. They have webinars that are quick and easy to participate in, completely done online. Organ workshops coming up this summer in various locations. So it seems like MLC has an offering for most anyone out there who's looking for some education opportunities this summer related to public ministry. So do check out the link that we have in the show notes.
Very good. Speaking of classes, I just want to give a little bit of a recap. I was out in Cleveland at an Ohio Pastors Conference get together the last couple days. I just got back last night. Wanted to give a shout out to a couple guys there that have been contributors on the show, and actually one of them was an interview of the show, Steve Bauer. He was the Accordance guy. We had kind of shoot out some Bible software, so got to see Steve again. Tim Wagner, who's been a contributor to the show, was there as well. Had a great time. We were talking about productivity for a day and a half, and it's one of the topics I really love to get into, and lots of great ideas. I learned a lot from them, and hopefully they picked up a few things that they could use in their ministry. So, and one of my tips, my tip of the week actually comes out of that workshop, so stay tuned.
I think you should just dive right in and share it with us. We want to know what that is.
So we're going way out of order here. We're off the rails.
And I don't know if it's ever been done. Martin, go first.
No problem. Let me share with you what I shared with them, and that is not a new product, but a product that has really kind of taken it to the next level, and it is a task management tool called Todoist, Todoist. It's been around actually for some time, but what attracted me to it at this point is that it is available on any platform that you could pick. It's available on the web, Android, iOS. It's available on the Mac. It's available on Windows. There's a plugin for Chrome, Firefox, Safari, and plugins for your email clients, Gmail and Outlook. And because I use a bunch of different platforms, that's kind of a requirement for some kind of task management tool. And Todoist does this really well. They have what every task management tool should have, a way obviously to quickly and easily enter tasks, and they use some natural language technologies as well. So you could say, you could type in something like, call mom every Saturday at 7, and it would automatically create a recurring event and remind you of it, and then put it right on your calendar for every Saturday at 7 p.m. So it kind of intuits what you're trying to do and does an excellent job at it. Then once it's in there, you have the ability to tag it with different kinds of tools that they give you. One of them is a project tag, so you could have as many projects as you would like, which is important. The next one is labels, which is another way to kind of delineate one task from another. Let's say you want to put a task in that would be you need to email somebody or call somebody. So you could have a calls label. So at some point you could say, hey, show me all the tasks that I have with the calls label on them. And then finally you have filters, and that deals more with priorities. Some could be red flags, black flags, whatever kind of filter you want to put on them. So you can slice and dice your information any way you want. I've tried most of the platforms. They allow subtasks, like I said, recurring dates, multiple priorities. There's also ability to comment or share content. So if you're in a team, you can share it with other people using the same tool. The basic app is free. To get some of the filters and some of the more advanced features, it is $28 a year, which is a bargain, at least in my mind, for all the different platforms that you have at your disposal if you use a tool like this. I'm not, even though I speak super highly of it and I'm real high on it, I'm still trying to figure out whether this is the tool I'm going to use. I try and keep my tasks separate between professional and personal, so that they're not all mixed together, so I can turn one off and turn the other on. And as you know, Sally, for our professional stuff, we use Trello for our task management. I really like what Trello does, and I could use Trello for my personal stuff, although it's not quite across all the platforms that Todoist is. So I'm still kind of debating. I'm going to try it out for a while, see if it works. I may still use Trello for my personal stuff, because you can have a personal board or boards, you know, in Trello too, and keep those things separate. But it doesn't quite have all the features that I was mentioning that Todoist has. So we'll see where that goes. But I'm really bullish on what Todoist has done here. They have really done a nice job with syncing all that content across 10 different platforms, and especially that Gmail plugin, which is what I use for email, because I think the tasks feature in Gmail is not all that good. And this kind of put it, if you put this on top of Gmail, kind of takes that to the next level as well. So I'm hoping that will work well. I've tried it a little bit, seems to work really well. I can push emails into tasks, push things onto calendars, set reminders, those kinds of things. So we'll see how it goes.
Awesome. Thanks. Well, yeah, nothing like a little anticipation. The Wells Tech audience will be waiting for your final verdict.
Yeah. All right. What do you have, Sally?
My turn to share my pick of the week, and it actually came to me via teacher Rachel Pearson. Rachel commented recently that she was getting involved with Google CS First, I think maybe for the second year, she said. So not new to her, but it was new to me. Google CS First is Google's education initiative for computer science or programming. So getting programming in front of students, and it's targeted to students in grades 4 through 8. And it uses a very friendly platform that we've talked about many times on the show, Martin, and that's MIT's Scratch platform, which is drag and drop blocks that create code. And their concept here is that volunteers would want to start a club. So it's not necessarily meant for during the school day, but an extracurricular kind of activity. It says all the training materials are provided, all kinds of resources to go along with it, and no experience is needed. And they even have on their homepage, you know, some people from different walks of life who are participating, who aren't necessarily programmers themselves, but who are leading these kind of initiatives and helping students get an introduction to programming. So you'll find on the website, it's cs-first.com. They have a page where you can start a club. The minimum requirements would be to that all the students would have access to a computer lab or laptops, one per student, with a reliable internet or Wi-Fi connection, and all the students have access. So yeah, if you've got those kind of conditions, perhaps this is a method that you would want to use to introduce programming to students. And they do provide some sample materials. And as I said, it is Scratch. And I've taught Scratch before to students. And you might be wondering kind of, well, what's different about this? Well, they've actually put together training videos and things. They've given the kids objectives and goals and, you know, things to design rather than just Scratch being a blank screen that right. You could do anything with. They've kind of framed a, you know, structured a framework around how to teach them, and they do it through steps. They give them a high C's activity to get them started, but they talk about storytelling, fashion and design, art, friends, social media, sports, game design, very popular with students. I think there's a video in here where the kid's like, I want to design games when I grow up. You know, I hear that a lot from students. They're interested and have lots of ideas for doing their own game design. Under resources, you can find all kinds of information in regard to training materials. And again, lots of video-based training, so you can watch and learn. They've done it really well. You can speed up or slow down the video, so you can, you know, take it in at a faster pace if you want to get through them pretty quickly. But it walks you right through, you know, making it work for you, preparing for your first club day, how to work with a self-paced club, setting up computers, print materials, etc. So it's like Google's holding your hand all the way through this process to help you roll out these kind of this kind of program to students. And they're looking for volunteers and people to start clubs all over the place. So if this fits with some of your goals, maybe you'd want to try it as a summer program to do a club over the summer or some type of camp or something. Check out the resources here. They look to be very, very well done and easy to accomplish.
What grade level do you think these are at?
It says 4th through 8th grade.
Okay.
So, which fits really well with Scratch. I think it's very well geared for those grade levels. And I think, I may be remembering something different, but I think I remember watching something where you can actually see the coding that's behind the blocks and things. So you can begin to transition to actually writing real code instead of this kind of pseudocode with blocks and things. Mm-hmm. So they've done it very well.
Sweet. Mm-hmm. All right. Yeah, looks like well-done resources there, too. They didn't chintz out on those. So, good. Let's move on to the next segment in our little show called Wells Tech, and that would be ministry resources.
And this week we have something to share from Pastor Rob Gunther. I really liked this email we received from Pastor Gunther recently. It's actually an application of something that I've worked with as well, and it's basically using a plugin for a set of Google tools. The concept is that Pastor Gunther gives a lot of catechism quizzes, and catechism quizzes can take a lot of time to review and grade. And so Pastor Gunther set up a front-end Google form for students to fill out with the catechism quiz information that he's requesting from them. And then he's using a plugin called Fluberoo to grade the forms. And it'll actually grade the forms and send the student their grade and responses as well. I've taught Fluberoo in different Google Forms classes that I've taught, and this is exactly the kind of application that I envisioned with it. So I'll just share my screen real quick. And Right now I'm on flubaru.com, so this is where you can actually watch a little demo of it here. It's
Sweet Spot. FLUBAROO.com.
That's right, Flubaru. It's Sweet Spot is grading multiple choice type quizzes. That's probably the easiest thing that it can do for you. And basically you set up a form with your quiz, you take the quiz and answer it all correctly, and then you point Flubaru to that response as being the standard that everything else is graded against. And then you can actually detail like responses based on how they answer and things like that. So Pastor Gunther sent us a link to his catechism area, and we can actually click in and see one of his catechism quizzes, filling in their name, their email address, and then, like I said, fill in the blank type questions here, but he's telling them spelling and capitalization do count, because when Google and Flubaru grades the quiz, it wants to match exactly with the spelling and the capitalization. So it would mark it incorrect if they spelled it wrong. But he basically put in all his questions, and they have a place to fill in the answers. You can see it's just Bible, or it's actually from the Catechism about hallowed be thy name. And they fill in, you know, what the response is in the catechism to that. How is God's name kept holy? God's name is kept holy when blank is blank and it's blank, blah, blah, blah. So very simple for the students to go through and fill in the things that he's asking here. As soon as they do, literally it may be a minute or less, the email comes to them with their graded quiz and any responses based on their answers and things. So pretty snazzy from the student's point of view. Does take some time to set up. Let's see. He said it takes him about 30 minutes to put a quiz together, as opposed to 5 minutes in Word and clicking print. But ultimately, he thinks it will save him tons of time in the long run. And yeah, sounds more complicated than it is. I think it's doable. Yep. I'm sorry, Martin, I didn't hear you.
Correcting is really what I think he's trying to avoid, especially absolutely, if you have known answers, and that's what Flubaru is good at. So,
mm-hmm. Yeah, he closed his email with saying, hoping this takes the correcting out of catechism once and for all. So mm-hmm. Worth the investment if that's the case.
Very good. And Flubaru is free, so I think probably worth a try if that's something that you do. So, and even if you have students in class and you're not doing a flipped classroom scenario, I think there's a time saving here. So definitely. Very good. We are at that point in our show where we are going to share with you our featured video of the week, and I have a sneaking suspicion that it might have something to do with online learning.
And not only online learning, but with Moodle itself. So we have basically an overview video, what is Moodle, done by the folks at Moodle. And we'll also point you to the Moodle video channel on YouTube. So if you want to check that out, you can learn a lot more about Moodle if it's something that interests you. So, yeah, check out our show notes page, wellstech.wells.net, for that featured video and learn more about what Moodle is.
Very nice. Sally, next week we return to probably the last full chapter of our book, With All Your Heart. And we've reserved a chapter just to deal with troubleshooting. There is no perfect project. Things go wrong. We do things wrong. We make some bad decisions. Things break. Things don't go as expected. What do you do? And so we're going to try and identify the many types of things that could go wrong and make some suggestions for how your church or school project might go better and things that you can do to keep it that way. So With All Your Heart, troubleshooting chapter coming up next week, and we also have an interview scheduled.
We do. I'm looking forward to very much speaking with Missionary Mike Hartman and Pastor Nathan Wagenknecht, both associated with one Latin America team project to do outreach in Latin America. Missionary Hartman, obviously, down in Mexico, heading up that outreach effort, and former missionary Pastor Nathan Wagenknecht now working with multi-language publications as a translation coordinator and things. And so it's really neat to see the progress they're making in efforts for online outreach, and maybe a little course correction they've done along the way, and how maybe they've done some troubleshooting of challenges that have come up as they've moved forward with those initiatives.
Pretty big projects they've been connected with, so I'm sure they'll have some interesting insights. Both very smart guys, and happy that they're willing to share some of their time with us. So Absolutely. That's what you have in store for you next week. That's going to do it for this week. If you want to join the show, you can do that. And that is by simply giving us your thoughts, comments, feedback through email, wellstech@wells.net, of course. Go to our show notes page where you can not only give feedback, but you can see all of the resources that we've collected over 440 episodes, and that's wellstech.wells.net. And then we're in all the social networks and social bookmarking sites. You can find those icons across the top. Just click on one and type, and we'd be happy to share your thoughts, your information, your suggestions with everybody else on the show. We will have a community feedback show the week after next, so you have a little bit of time, but we'd love to hear what you think about online learning, about project management, about anything that we talk about, or some things we don't even talk about that you'd like to hear us talk about. So please take advantage of that. Sally, thanks for your work on the show, and I look forward to talking with you again next week. Bye-bye, everybody.